I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. We have a two-part first hour of our show, Refugees in Wisconsin, the first half hour, and later, how climate change activists won the fight against the Keystone Pipeline. First, while we debate whether or not to accept Syrian refugees, the images of hundreds of thousands of refugees in camps in Jordan and Turkey, the tens of thousands boarding flimsy death boats and walking across Europe to find a place to live, the deaths of children, all of that weighs heavily on us. We have opened doors to many seeking safety and a chance for a better life. So this hour, we thought we would talk about the refugee experience in Wisconsin. Lutheran Social Services has been at the forefront of refugee resettlement in our state. Their resettlement program offers guidance and support for refugee families and individuals as they arrive. And every year, hundreds of refugees are granted resettlement to our local communities. They come from, just to mention a few, Burma, Iraq, Somalia, Sudan, Burundi, Rwanda, Congo, and many other places, and from all walks of life. Our guest this part of the show is Mary Flynn. Mary is the program supervisor at Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan. She leads the Refugee Resettlement Program, which connects refugees and immigrants with resources. And she also happens to be host of WPR's music program, The Blue Side, which airs on WPNE and WHND on Tuesday evenings at 10 o'clock. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. We don't want to debate whether or not to accept Syrian refugees. We'll get into that on another show, but we will accept calls on the refugee experience in the state of Wisconsin and the screening process that people go through in the state and how people are resettled, where they're coming from, how their lives have been shattered, and how they are rebuilt in our very state. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. Hi, Mary. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, good afternoon, Kathleen. Thank you.
Thank you. You know, this experience, when we look at Syrian refugees, to get aside from the politics of all of this, so many of these people, and I'm sure you're familiar with many from other countries, have absolutely nothing. They're fearing they're leaving war, they're leaving terror, they're leaving everything, and leaving with nothing, with an unknown future. It really is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is extraordinary, especially the sheer numbers and their flight. It has to be so quick, and they're just going to whatever place and country, and in many cases, boats that they can get onto, to flee a lot of terror, a lot of violence. It's very humbling.
Mm-hmm. I was interested in reading the list of those who seek safety here in the state of Wisconsin, and they really come from, as you say, every corner of the world and from all walks of life.
They do. They run the continuum of skill and education. Just like in America, there are people that are laborers and farmers and skilled craftsmen, all the way to doctors, neurosurgeons, engineers. This war and terror and violence that's going on throughout parts of the world really is not very selective about who it victimizes.
Mm-hmm. How do those who come to Wisconsin find their way here? You may want to center, if you remember the stories, Leela's story from Somalia I found particularly compelling.
The refugee resettlement process is really, by the time they get to the United States, they have gone through an extensive international process. First of all, the United Nations looks very carefully at hotspots throughout the world. One of the first commitments of the United Nations is to try to repatriate or repatriate people back to their homes or stabilize a place so that people can return to the lives and the society and the culture that they lived in. Once it becomes apparent that that's not going to happen, they start setting up field offices in which people gravitate towards, and they have to register, and then they have to wait for an appointment for an interview. The interviews are compelling, they're extensive, and sometimes they're multiple. they may take a family and separate out the adults, and they will interview them separately. And those stories have to match. And over time, over multiple interviews, they have to be consistent. Becoming a refugee is not as easy as walking up and asking for asylum or safety. They really do go through an interview process. Once that happens, the wait begins. If they're lucky, they may be placed on a list for a third country, to be resettled in a third country, because the definition of a refugee is fleeing one country, seeking safety and asylum in a second, and ultimately being resettled in a third place. Mm-hmm. And that's what makes a refugee a refugee.
Mm-hmm.
So the wait begins. If they're lucky, they get placed on a list for that third country. At that time, the refugee is asked if, for instance, will they accept resettlement in the United States. If they say yes, their name is submitted to the United States State Department, the Bureau of Refugee Population and Migration. Actually works very closely with international security forces, and they undergo a very rigorous, comprehensive, and thorough background and screening check. And those also are done several times throughout the refugee process and really continue up until the time the person gets on the plane to come to the United States. Once that's all taken care of, the Department of State's, it's Bureau of Population Refugee Migration, PRM, they will sit down with 9 national agencies. My agency, Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, is an affiliate of LIRS, Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service out of Baltimore. That's one of the 9 national VOLEGs. They sit down with the State Department. The State Department will say, we have this allocation of people. Where will they go? And these 9 agencies coordinate and agree. And if some go to LIRS, they may say, do they have friends or family in Milwaukee? All right, we'll send those people to Milwaukee. If they don't have friends or family, they allocate them to maybe a community that does have existing people already there to help ease integration, to help ease resettlement. So it is kind of an organized process. About 75% of the refugees that we resettle do have what's called a U.S. tie in the Wisconsin area, but many do not, and you can only imagine what it's like for them to get off the plane and wonder what's on the other side.
Oh, yes, and that's why I was captivated by Lila's story, who was working as a journalist and targeted in 2006. She was from Somalia, fled to Kenya, applied to the UN for protection, and came to Milwaukee. Her family had been killed. She had one sister left and came to Milwaukee by herself.
Yes. A single female from Somalia, culturally a single female. They have protection in their culture. You know, it's rather patriarchal. So her story was really amazing. She had a lot of strength and fortitude, but she also saw the opportunity of the United States and really was trying to make the best of it.
Mm-hmm. And people, you work with so many people who are volunteers who help in numerous ways. These refugees find homes, find jobs, figure out a money system, how to do laundry, how to get around town.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of volunteers that really have taken the refugee situation to heart and provide thousands of hours of volunteer time and support, English as a second language classes, transportation, tutoring, helping them pay bills, and also supporting the fact that the ultimate goal of refugee resettlement, which was kind of a surprise to me when I first started my job, the goal of refugee resettlement is self-sufficiency. That is the American dream, that rugged individualism, and that everybody is expected to stand on their own 2 feet and take care of themselves.
We're going to welcome phone calls. We have a shorter period of time. We'll talk about this issue at greater length in a future show. But because of the nature, we wanted to remove the politics from the Syrian refugee discussion and just talk about the refugee experience, because there are people who are living in Wisconsin now who have fled war-torn areas on earth, from every corner of earth, and who have resettled in the state of Wisconsin. sometimes by themselves. And imagine what that experience is like, to leave everything, to leave your family sometimes, if your family is still alive, to have nothing with you, to have no job, to have no place to live, to have literally nothing. And Lutheran Social Services has for many years now been doing extraordinary work in resettling, resettling refugees from all over the world. We welcome phone calls for Mary. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And our first caller for you, Mary, is Mary. Hi, Mary in Madison.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. And I really appreciate the topic. I think it's really important to look at the human side of this and not the politics side necessarily. I have two questions. The first is, how do you talk to your kids about this topic, or how should one talk to your kids? And my second is, how can Wisconsin families help? We've even talked about that it would be really neat to host a family if we could. So those are my two questions.
Thank you, Mary. And Mary?
How to talk to your children, that is really a big question. And I think that there is a lot of media coverage that can be very frightening. And I think that parents always would do best to support their children by talking openly about it, kind of tempering what kids see on TV, but still acknowledging the fear and the uncertainty that is apparent when you watch TV. I think open communication is the very first step. But a very interesting question. You've given me some food for thought for the future.
And in terms of what families can do, you have a number of very interesting and important volunteer opportunities.
We do. There are many, many ways that people can get involved, both locally and even remotely. People could be move-in teams, where people would gather donations to help set up an apartment for a new family who's arriving. Actually, we have to secure housing. And so we have to find a landlord that's willing to work with someone who's not even here yet and work with us to create, to set up an apartment and furnish it. And that takes manpower and that takes muscle. So we always appreciate help with that. If there are landlords listening that are willing to talk to us about what renting with Lutheran Social Services and a refugee would entail, we would appreciate those conversations. We want people to be in safe, affordable, and adequate housing. Groups can also be involved by becoming a home supply group or a home supply church. We can give you a list of supplies that are required by the Department of State to be in the apartment upon arrival, and they can be very inexpensive or they can be donations. It's a good way to get kids involved. I mean, a single roll of toilet paper has great impact, believe it or not. If people would like to be what's called a resettlement support, they could have a structured engagement with the refugee, you know, times that they go over and visit on a structured, organized basis for 90 days, kind of like a teacher. You want to help people get on their feet and start their new life in an organized way. And if they'd like to be involved a little bit longer, up to 1 year, they could provide monthly visits that would provide that ongoing support to make sure that they understand about paying rent on time, answering their questions about employment. Winter weather's coming, explaining to them about how you deal with winter weather, shoveling, safety concerns. And then once again, when spring comes, kind of helping them explain the four seasons. So it can be very small, and it can also be ongoing, and all of it is very important.
Mary, how many refugees do we take into Wisconsin every year? Is it hundreds?
In fiscal year 2015, which ended September 30th, the state of Wisconsin took in just a little over 1,400 refugees.
1,400?
Statewide, yes.
That's quite a few, isn't it?
It is quite a few. There are agencies in Texas, however, where one office takes in 1,500 a year, and they have, you know, multiple sites in Texas. So it kind of depends on the dynamics. Wisconsin has always been a very welcoming state, and I foresee that continuing. I think it's a great place to live, and it's a great place for refugees to come and start their new lives.
And you have been, as I recall, at the forefront of resettling quite a few refugees from certain war-torn areas. I think of the number of Hmong refugees who are in the state of Wisconsin. You resettled a number of Hmong, didn't you?
We did. Lutheran Social Services was on the forefront of refugee resettlement since 1974. I heard a statistic yesterday that just really put everything in context. The United States has faced enormous amounts of refugees and crises in the past. Particularly in 1979, the United States took in over 100,000 Vietnamese and Hmong refugees just in 1979. Hmm. And in 1980, over 200,000.
Oh, my.
Right now, nationally, we're looking at 85,000 for the next fiscal year, which runs from October 1st to September 30th.
Let's go to Lynn. Thank you very much, Mary, for your call. Lynn in Eau Claire. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen, and your guest, Mary. I'm in Eau Claire. I have a very dear friend who's Palestinian. He escaped. His family's still there. We have extra room. We've offered to help. They don't want to leave. That's their home. They're being encroached on from all sides. Their olive trees that are innocent are being burned to the ground in order to facilitate kibbutzes. Not all refugees. They're refugees in their own land. They don't want to leave.
Yeah, it takes a lot for somebody to leave everything and just leave, doesn't it, Mary?
It does, and you're referring specifically to a group of people that are referred to as internally displaced persons, often shorthand IDP. And in particular, the Iraqis that we're currently resettling fit that category. These are people that don't want to leave, and they can't get out, but they can't stay either. I always say that the loudest sound on my job is the sound of hearts breaking. Mm-hmm. And the caller, I could tell from the passion in her voice, she's seen that firsthand.
Yeah. What about the number of people who are in refugee camps all over the world? Do they have a possibility? Because sometimes you hear they've been there for years, Mary. What would be the process for them to be able to be resettled somewhere else? Is there a pathway?
You know, it is the luck of the draw.
Really?
Somebody one time said, you know, being a refugee is a 10 million to one opportunity. There are over 50,000 registered refugees in the world. And the United States takes 85,000.
Lynn, thanks for your call. And we go to Philothea in Viroqua. Hi.
Hi. I just have a brief question. When we talk about taking 2 or 3 years to screen these people, where are they living in between time?
Refugees are living in a variety of circumstances. Many of the Burmese that fled through an area bordering Thailand are actually in Thai camps. Those are the ones where you see the classic pictures of the bamboo huts with leaves for roofs. There are other Burmese that have to flee the other way through the south, and they end up in Malaysia. And there, if you don't work, you don't eat. There is no protection. They have to find their own living places. They have to make their own way in an urban setting. A lot of Somalis are living outside Somalia in some of the most desperate living conditions possible. There are Iraqis that are still living in Baghdad that are waiting and hoping and praying to get out safely. So it really depends on where their initial home was and the violence that's creating instability for them.
And tell me about the success of the resettlement program. You're dealing with completely changing a person's life in terms of language and eating and jobs and transportation and everything, people who may have had wildly different life experiences before they arrive. How difficult and how long a process is it to find yourself comfortable in America?
You know, once again, that is so individual, and that's probably one of the most interesting and, once again, humbling aspects of my job. I'm on the air with you today from your Madison location, and there was a refugee family from Iraq that arrived just last week in Madison. They speak very little English. They got themselves a bus pass, and the father of the family showed up at our office by himself after even been here only 3 days. So, you know, some people just are like, I'm in the United States. I have opportunity, and I can go where I want. And they get on that bus, and they're just looking to make use of the promise of America that they see.
And what about the availability of safe and affordable housing? That's a big issue in this country for poor people as it is. Are you successful in being able to find homes, or is that a difficult process?
You know, that's always a difficult process, and we have to follow a list of activities outlined by the Department of State's PRM. It has guidelines about housing that we have to secure before they arrive. We have to pick them up at the airport and drive them to their new permanent housing. We also have a list of activities that we have to complete with them in the official resettlement period, which is only 90 days. This is not a long process.
90 days. It all must be
90 days.
Done.
And then there is some ongoing services up to 1 year. And then after that, it's really information and referral until they become citizens at 5 years. So we're always looking for affordable, adequate housing. Some refugees do need to receive some really good guidance and instruction and modeling of how to take care of a home, and that's where volunteers can come in. Mm-hmm. That's really great. But refugees do arrive in some degree of entry level, and they're happy to have the opportunity to do that in the United States.
And where do we place, Mary, in a worldwide perspective here? Are we more welcoming than most other nations when it comes to resettlement and taking people in, or are we not, or does that vary widely from, you know, year to year?
The United States pretty much has a consistent refugee policy. The first week of every October, there's something called the Presidential Determination, in which the United States government, the White House, and Congress set forth a projected number that they will accept, and they sign off on that, and that kind of creates the plan for the coming year. There are about 15 other countries internationally that do accept refugees, but the United States is unique in that people arrive with fully documented legal permanent status with the authorization to work. That authorization, though, is also an expectation that you will work and become self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
And some countries, they don't allow you to work.
And is your work pretty much completely apolitical? Would you get involved in some kind of high-level discussions if they are happening right now as to whether or not Syrian refugees should be in this country, or do you try to stay, and do you stay out of all of those discussions?
You know, when people get off the plane, that's a human being walking off that plane,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't matter what they look like, what religion they are, where they're from. Yes, we're aware of their cultural background, their language, their ethnicity, but we really are welcoming a person who has fled terror and violence and really wish they could have, they really just wanted to be home and they wanted to be safe. So we're very fortunate in that we just get to greet that person with wide eyes and just being so joyful to be in the United States, and that's always a great gift in working with refugees.
Well, you do extraordinary work, and I know there will be people listening who would like to volunteer with your organization because you have a need for volunteers. How can they do so, Mary?
Well, I want to make sure that I include our other refugee partners.
Sure.
Throughout the state, there's World Relief in the Fox Valley. They're in Oshkosh. In the Milwaukee area, there's Catholic Charities, International Institute of Wisconsin, Pan-African Community Association, and then my agency, Lutheran Social Services. Getting on the web is easy. Check us out. Give us a call. We would love to answer your questions and welcome you to be involved.
All right. One more phone call for you, and then we're just switching topics. Jess in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My quick point is that if we're worried about the people coming over and whatnot, we have FEMA camps all over the country. We also have some closed military bases that can be converted into refugee camps. And at the same time, we can educate and we can background check. We can give the medical services needed and so on in these facilities. Why don't we use those?
Have we used those ever, Mary?
Not to the best of my knowledge. The United States government, you know, when they bring people here, when they bring refugees here, they want them to land with the same rights and responsibilities of everybody in the United States. And that opportunity and the expectation to be self-sufficient. They also are not going to bypass or shorten those very important security checks to make sure that people that do land are ready to contribute to our country and to strengthen our national security.
Mary, thank you ever so much for being with us. We sure appreciate your time and the work you're doing. Thanks.
Thank you.
Mary Flynn is the program supervisor at Lutheran Social Services of Wisconsin and Upper Michigan, and she leads the refugee resettlement program. Over 1,000 people coming to Wisconsin each year from all over the world. We will eventually, maybe later today, put a list of and phone numbers of those places because I know there are many opportunities for volunteering, and many of you might be interested in doing just that. So we will list phone numbers and agencies doing that kind of work in our state in a little while. We're going to continue. We're doing a two-part show because of the nature of the news this week. There are other issues we want to cover, but we don't want to ignore what's been first and foremost on many people's minds this week, and that's terrorism. We're going to continue, though, in the second half hour of our program today, how climate change activists won the fight against the Keystone Pipeline. It's really a pretty amazing story, and we'll hear about it as we continue on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.